is number 21-22-25, Vandermark v. McDonough. Mr. Saunders.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. So, properly interpreted, there isn't a conflict between the statutes at issue here. Congress used the term furnish when talking about the direct provision of care or advanced arrangements made by the VA. And in the command that the VA shall reimburse, it was talking about paying back a veteran for care that he's had to secure on his own.
Does your view of furnish in 1724 make it unlawful for the VA under the B provisions, the exceptions to the ban on furnishing, to reimburse for non-previously arranged private care, which the regulations expressly provide for?
Right. I think there are two ways to look at it. Under the understanding that we have of furnish, and appears to be the understanding throughout Title 17, it may be that the VA needs to be doing more proactively under that section to be furnishing under it. Now, there is a way to resolve this case without...
I'm not understanding your answer. Are you saying that the B, that furnish in B does not allow reimbursement?
The furnish in B, when you look at the way it's used throughout the statute, should be that they, for what they're furnishing under the May furnish provision, they should be engaged in more proactive efforts to supply that care.
Answering the question. Furnish has the same meaning in A and B, right?
Correct.
Okay. Does furnish in B then not allow reimbursement?
Furnish in B would not allow pure reimbursement. It would allow, you know, payment after it's made advanced arrangements for care, something that would fall under the meaning of furnish.
Okay, but, that seems to me to ignore the 1987 legislative history, where the statute was amended to remove the U.S. citizenship requirement because of Canadians who had served in Vietnam. And the House report, in connection with that legislation, specifically says that the statute would allow reimbursement. Are you familiar with that?
I'm familiar with the change that was made then. I think that sort of regardless of what may be...
Are you familiar with the House report?
I'm not as familiar with the House report in...
It specifically talks about the statute will allow reimbursement of Canadian veterans.
And you could have a situation, I think, in which you would still be furnishing the care if the VA is involved in advance in helping to find the doctor, in setting up that network, then the payment details, there might be flexibility in how they're done. But to have a situation where you're purely not doing it in advance... Now, the government's position...
Just to be clear, so 38 CFR 17.35C, in your view, is overbroad. Claims for payment or reimbursement for services not previously authorized by VA under this section are governed by 17.123 to 127, which are the procedures that govern the 17.28 reimbursement process.
Right, so that provision added in 2018...
Yes.
I think was being pushed by the VA's understanding that understanding of furnish being a broader term. It's being driven by its misreading of the statutory text.
Do you think that's overbroad?
Yes, it's overbroad to the extent it applies to individuals. Now, the statute's set up in such a way that I suppose you could call it reimbursement when the provider is directly submitting the bill, which is something that can be allowed as well. But I think another thing to remember here
I'm still not understanding how you can get around the fact that furnish in B is specifically designed to include reimbursement. And if B and to furnish means reimbursement is possible, then the A provision, which bars furnishing, bars reimbursement of veterans abroad who are not getting treated for a service-connected disability.
Well, I think then there's, before we get to sort of specific versus general canons, the only other thing I would say in the face of the statute there is for purposes of 1725 and 1728. Congress is clearly distinguishing in those provisions between reimbursing and furnishing. The premise of those provisions is the veteran needs to be reimbursed because the secretary has not furnished.
Okay,
so at least in
1724, reimburse includes, furnish includes reimburse, you lose, right?
No, not at all. If furnish includes reimburse in 1724, then we have conflicting statutes. We have a shall not command and we have a shall command. And the way that that would be reconciled is to look traditionally at the more specific provision governing over the general. And here, the emergency treatment.
Right, but the problem is that there are two different ways of looking, at least two different ways of looking at which is more specific, the border way and the type of service way. And so
I mean, I think there are actually three dimensions. So one is the type of service, emergency treatment, the shall reimburse for that, clearly a subset of medical services. Right. So that's more specific. Also, to get to the conflict.
And foreign is clearly a subset of no matter where.
Well, I don't think it's quite right to say that 1725 and 1728 are saying no matter where, because remember, the definition of emergency treatment only applies
Department... Not no matter where, but without regard to geography in any way.
Well, but they only apply when the department or other federal facility is not reasonably available.
Right.
And so I think when you talk about sort of which is more specific or which is more general, 1724 is painting, yes, with this very broad geographic brush. For 1725 and 1728, yes, those are covering areas in the U.S. too, but it's narrowly sliced. It looks more like a scalpel. If you're within a certain proximity of one of those federal facilities, and there are 171 medical centers in the U.S. and many more outpatient clinics, if you're in proximity to one of those, you're not going to be entitled to reimbursement there. So I think in one provision, geographically, we have the broad brush. And the other provision, we have the scalpel. I mean, if you did a map of where you could be reimbursed, it's going to look more like Swiss cheese, all sorts of mold. So I reject the premise that sort of one is more general or specific with respect to geography. I think at least is a closer call. And I would submit the sort of degree of specificity there makes ours more specific. And then here's the other dimension. The entire premise of the government's argument, the only way you get to a conflict is by saying that furnish is the broader category that subsumes reimbursement. So that's another dimension on which 1725 and 1728 are the narrower provisions. So I think on those three dimensions, you have two that are absolutely unequivocally, we are the narrower provisions. And then the third one for geography, I would say we are at least the more specific provision in terms of the way it's defined.
Can I ask you another question about, in some sense, legislative history, or in one sense, maybe statutory history? So as I understand it, in 1968, I think it was, VA adopted a regulation that provided for reimbursement of non-previously arranged emergency services. At the time, the statute, again, my understanding, provided no authority, possible authority for that regulation except a furnish statute, the predecessor, the 1958, basically, predecessor of this. And then Congress, in 1973, enacts the first emergency provision. That's, I guess, 1728, is it? 1728. And says we're expanding it some. By and large, it doesn't say we're giving a statutory basis that didn't previously exist. So why wouldn't we read that somewhat in the vein of the recent George against McDonough case to say when the VA first enacted a reimbursement provision by regulation, it was doing so under authority that of the furnish provision, so thought that furnish covered reimbursement, and then Congress in 1973 just codified that, but plus expanded it to certain non-service connected things.
I don't remember the VA in 1968 in that regulation saying that that was the source of its authority. I think the sort of chain for me breaks at the beginning, which is the VA was doing it.
I don't think, as I read the then existing statutes, the 638 kind of series, I was not able to find anything, any authorization that could possibly apply except a furnished provision.
And I think, unfortunately, it may beg the question as to what the basis for its authority was, or whether it was pushing the envelope with that regulation. And so given that, I think it becomes attenuated in terms of looking for something in the legislative history of the 1973 Act to require Congress to specifically say, we're filling in the basis here. I don't think this would be the first time that an agency might have gotten a little bit out over its skis and had Congress come in and maybe be silent on the question. So I just think that as between the plain text and the distinction Congress is making in those provisions itself, 1725 and 1728, between furnishing and reimbursing, and the way we see furnish being used in the other sections of Title 17, I think it would be a real stretch to say Congress is endorsing the furnish view.
And your argument on specific wins over general depends on reading in 1725 and 1728 the absence of any reference to foreign versus domestic as an affirmative command to reach beyond U.S. borders.
Well, it's,
as opposed to, it's silent on the subject, so the right way to accommodate a very clear ban about the borders with a provision that says nothing about borders is follow the ban about the borders.
Well, I think two responses, John. First, the operative command in 1725 and 1728 is domestically focused. The shall reimburse command isn't about regulating the primary conduct or what happens in the doctor's office, right? It is a command to a U.S. official sitting in the United States. And then geographically, it doesn't specifically mention borders, but again, the clear concern animating that was Congress's concern that a veteran who's too far away from a medical facility and has a medical emergency.
Would suggest to me, I'm just thinking aloud at the moment, but it suggests to me an argument that I don't remember making, that actually when payment is made from the United States Treasury down on, I don't know, 14th Street, or I guess right over here, that is not actually furnishing hospital or domiciliary care or medical services outside the United States. In fact, maybe it's not, because the whatever furnishing is going on inside the United States.
I think that with respect to the first questions about the foreign medical program, I mean, those would also be, to the extent it's being operated as a reimbursement system, I think that what you've described is exactly right. The actual conduct of reimbursement happens in the United States because we read furnish as being sort of more directly involved in the provisions. I think that is more naturally read as something that would be outside the United States.
So I'm puzzled as to how these emergency provisions could be interpreted to apply outside the United States, because the assumption seems to be that it's dealing with providing for emergency service for people who would otherwise be entitled to regular service, correct?
Correct. Yes.
And if those people are not entitled to regular service by virtue of 1724, then why would Congress intend to have them get emergency service when they couldn't get regular service?
Well, I'll back up. When we say entitled to regular service, I mean they're enrolled in the program and they had received health care within the last 24 months. Those are the eligibility criteria.
No, but the whole purpose of the emergency service provisions, as I thought you agreed, was to provide emergency service to people
right.
who would otherwise be entitled to regular health care. And the people we're talking about, by virtue of 1724, are not entitled to regular health care because they're outside the United States.
Well, the nature of the health care, the nature of the emergency is what was alarming. So 1725, 1728, imagine there's a veteran who lives in the United States and goes on a trip overseas to visit Vietnam or Guadalcanal and has a heart attack while traveling. Those would be covered. 1724 was originally designed, it's trying to keep the U.S. from having that sort of permanent footprint. They didn't want to be building the hospitals overseas. That may also ensnare someone. If someone is permanently moved overseas and is entirely disconnected from the U.S. system, isn't enrolled in the healthcare system here, hasn't received healthcare through the U.S. system in the last 24 months, then that person's not going to be eligible. So what we're talking about is...
Because of the eligibility criteria of 1725 and 1728.
Correct. And so what we're talking about is really veterans who have a presence in the U.S. and may be moving back and forth. I mean, Mr. Vandermark lives in Florida now. He was in Thailand for a period of time because his wife is from Thailand. But they've moved back to Florida. He had lived in the United States before that. So he wasn't someone who had sort of severed his connection from the U.S. medical. And interpreting it that way would leave the person who's truly just absolutely present in the U.S., always receives health care here, travels temporarily overseas and has a heart attack, and suddenly they're bankrupt because they can't afford it. That Congress was trying to avoid
that. Someone who... say lives in the United States and travels abroad and doesn't have an emergency, we're not talking about an emergency situation, that person cannot receive medical services at U.S. government expense, right?
Through the VA, no. But if it's not an emergency, that person, I mean, depending on the nature of the treatment, that person may have a chance to travel to the United States that the person who's having the emergency doesn't. In other words, if you're overseas and you get diagnosed with cancer and you're facing a very expensive course of treatment, you can choose to come home to the United States at that point.
Would you agree that a person wouldn't be able to get U.S. government-funded health care abroad?
The only reason I'm disagreeing with the U.S. government-funded is because if you're under TRICARE, the VA. They wouldn't receive the VA-funded health care abroad for a non-emergency where there may be more opportunity to get back to the United States. But in an emergency where it's of such urgency that a reasonable person couldn't get to a federal facility, then they didn't want that person to be left in the lurch. And I see I'm well into my rebuttal time.
Okay, any further questions? I'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Carhart?
May it please the Court. Congress instructed the Secretary of Veterans Affairs not to furnish medical care abroad for non-service-connected disabilities. This prohibition, which was enacted at Section 1724, prevented the Secretary from reimbursing Mr. Vandermark for medical expenses he incurred during treatment at a hospital in Thailand. The Veterans Court's decision was correct, and it should be affirmed. So I'll begin with the language of 1724.
Can I just be clear? So it seems to me... what you just said is not quite a complete argument. You also have to be saying that 1725 and 1728 don't override a 1724A ban,
that's
having
right.
established that ban does apply here.
That's right, Your Honor. And I'll make both parts of the argument. But the Veterans Court's decision encompassed both pieces of that, and both pieces, in our view, are correct. So I'll begin with the 1724 analysis, and then I'll turn to the relationship between 1724 and 1725 and 1728. So as the panel's question suggested, VA is of the view that 1724A and 1724B are parallel provisions. They both use the word furnish. They both that word furnish in both provisions goes back to the same root, which is a 1940s statute that the Veterans Court discussed, that both of the current 1724A is derived from, and the VA's understanding of furnish is that it encompasses reimbursement both in A and both and in B. And as the court noted, the Foreign Medical Program
might have been helpful if you'd looked at the 1987 legislative history about the Canadian citizens.
Understood, Your Honor. Appreciate that point, which I think does support our view. So there's the history dating back to 1940, where you have a statute that says claimants will not be entitled to receive, in substance, benefits abroad for not, period, and then the proviso, which is that for service-connected disabilities, the administrator can furnish care abroad. So in 1940, you have this prohibition, and in our view, that prohibition was carried forward in the late 1950s statutes and carries forward to this day. There's no indication that Congress ever intended to alter the meaning of
I'm sorry, are you suggesting that the 1940 provision is actually somehow textually clear about encompassing mere monetary payments?
So the 1940 provision says no person shall be entitled to receive domiciliary medical or hospital care, including treatment, who resides outside of the continental limits.
So that's just care, including treatment, which by itself suggests not just payment, but at least it doesn't. So what part of it makes clear that this is actually contemplating payment as part of the subject of this sentence?
The verb receive, the emphasis on what the claimant receives
is care,
rather than
receiving care. Receiving money is not receiving care.
Right. So in our view, the administrator would not have been permitted to make payments for that care under this statute, and that carried forward into subsequent statutes.
I'm sorry. I guess my question is, why do you think it is clear under this statute that VA would not have been entitled to pay for care?
So if no person shall be entitled to receive care, that would mean that if the person, in our view, receives care from a third-party service provider, the VA would not be able to use Treasury funds to pay for that care. So we understand the 1940 statute to bar reimbursement, just as the late 1950s statutes do. So then the proviso is created, and this is where the word furnish comes in, that the administrator may furnish, or the care may be furnished to veterans. So the proviso is the first introduction of the word furnish, and in our view, that word furnish is then imported into what's now 1724A in the late 1950s with those revisions. And there's no reason to think that the two provisions have a different meaning.
Doesn't furnish, though, imply some degree of active effort to accomplish the designated end, as the Black's Law Dictionary suggests?
So in the context of administrative law, even if the premise is correct, there absolutely is active effort on the part of the Secretary. And you can see that by looking at the Foreign Medical Program, which is implements 1724B, furnish. So before making any reimbursement payments under the Foreign Medical Program, the Secretary had to enact a regulation. He had to set up this program. He had to allocate employees to deal with it.
The Secretary didn't have to do anything with respect to whoever is actually providing the care to a veteran like Mr. Vandermark when he happens to be in Thailand. Is that correct?
Right, but when Congress is using the word furnish in an instruction to the Secretary, the most reasonable way of understanding that is talking about, is as saying to the Secretary, this is the type of program you're allowed to set up, this is the type of program you're not allowed to set up. So furnish care means this is what you can spend money on, this is what you cannot spend money on.
There can't have been a contemplation at the time that would be VA facilities that were providing the care. There were no VA facilities abroad. There was no contemplation that there would be any VA facilities abroad. The whole purpose of this statute, or the major purpose of the statute, was to give medical benefits to veterans with service-connected disabilities. And realistically, the only way that could happen would be either for the VA to pay somebody to provide the services, or either in advance or by reimbursement.
I agree with that. The Congress wasn't thinking about direct provision of care abroad in the late 1950s. They were thinking about VA spending money on care. And that's how we interpret Section 1724.
What's the best evidence for that? I mean, I understand that picture makes a kind of intuitive sense, but why? Where does one get that from?
I mean, one point is the 1940 statute that uses the word furnish. It was the reason that the proviso was introduced into the 1940 statute was to mitigate the effect of the prohibition. So it was saying to the administrator, you cannot provide care abroad, or you can't furnish care abroad, but you can furnish care for service-connected disabilities. So there's no reason to think that Congress would have had a narrow idea of what furnish meant in the 1940s when it was trying to do something that was beneficial to veterans. And from our perspective, that furnish was then carried forward into the late 1950s statute. And just more generally, a broader conception of furnish that we're advocating for, the contrary view would be to say that Congress was permitting reimbursement, but it was prohibiting direct provision of care and entering into contracts in advance. But it doesn't really make sense that Congress would say that the better methods of providing care from the perspective of controlling costs and ensuring that care is provided effectively.
I thought a little bit about that, and there's maybe a paragraph on this in the blue brief, but the idea, I think, that the blue brief is suggesting that there would be reasons not to set up federal government facilities in Thailand, say, that wouldn't extend to refusing to pay for a veteran exercising freedom to travel the way anybody else could, finding himself in Thailand with a need for emergency care and the government pays money for it, not whatever the Thai doctor charges, because the 1725 and 1728 give the VA plenty of authority to pay nothing more than is reasonable, but the government wouldn't open itself to, there's not a lot of concreteness about this. I don't know whether it's medical malpractice liability, whether it's providing abortions in a country that doesn't allow abortions. This was not elaborated in the blue brief. But there could be reasons, could there not, for Congress to say, don't make the more boots-on-the-ground presence abroad, but writing checks, that's another thing.
Well, first, the reason you're positing, Judge Toronto, I don't think that would extend to entering into contracts in advance with third parties, any need to prohibit that, even if there was a concern about federal facilities abroad. More generally, I think consistent with the broader purposes of Chapter 17, the focuses are much more on controlling taxpayer costs and on ensuring quality of care more than where federal facilities are built. So,
is there something you can point to that would support that statement you just made?
Well, even in 1725, you see, in the definition of emergency treatment that that Mr. Vandermark's focused on, understandably, the focus is on getting somebody to the nearest possible or the nearest federal facility possible as quickly as possible. The focus is on how the government can recoup costs once they've been paid out. So all these are indications of Congress's overarching purpose of controlling costs and making sure care is appropriately provided.
What would you describe the overarching purpose of providing for the emergency care when you can't get to a VA facility? Isn't it just that travel is such a normal and part of a enriched life that Congress wanted veterans to be able to travel without the risk of needing emergency care for which they would not have the government assistance?
I don't know if there's any indication that travel abroad was one of the purposes of 1725 or 1728. It certainly is the case.
Does it have anything to do with domestic travel?
Well, it certainly is the case that Congress wanted veterans to not have to be free to get to go about their lives and get paid for or get covered for emergency care that they receive. So we don't dispute that was Congress's purpose. The question is,
but I guess specifically was Congress concerned about emergency treatment for veterans who were traveling as opposed to living in remote areas distant from hospital facilities?
I'd understood the purpose to be more
hospital facilities.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'd understood the purpose to be focused on remote areas more than travel, but I don't recall specifically one way or the other the legislative history on that point.
Could you talk a little bit about the presumption against extraterritoriality? Have you seen it applied to a benefits program?
I'm not aware of any cases that have applied to the benefits program. I'm not aware of any cases that have foreclosed applying it to a benefits program. Consistent with some of the discussion that earlier, I think the purpose of Chapter 17 is to certainly we don't disagree that part of it is to give veterans benefits for the health care they receive. But it's not a pension statute where it's a status-based determination and veterans automatically get benefits based on their disability status. It's Congress is much more granular about in describing when care qualifies for federal reimbursement and for federal provision. So in our view, just describing the purpose of these provisions as just providing benefits to veterans is too general a purpose. Congress really went into painstaking detail about when care is covered. So looked at from the perspective of the Morrison test and subsequent Supreme Court precedent, the conduct relevant to the statute, to the statute's purpose or statute's focus is the care that Mr. Vandermark received here, and that care was received abroad. So in our view, that the canon should apply here. To be clear, though, that's a secondary argument from our perspective, because our primary argument is that Congress was not silent in this statutory provision on whether this statute applies abroad. Congress said, care cannot be provided abroad for non-service-connected disabilities.
Care cannot be furnished.
Care cannot be furnished, that's right.
Provided
for is a definition.
Provided would be, is a more capacious or less capacious term than furnished?
Provided for is a definition that the Veterans Court used, and in our view, that encompasses
provided for,
both direct and indirect.
Seems certainly broad. So just to double check something, I think you answered these questions, but if we were to look at the legislative history, 1973 for 1728, 1999 for 1725, if I've got that right, and maybe also the Federal Register in 1968 when the VA adopted the regulation that eventually became 1728, would we see any discussion of either of the following two distinctions, foreign versus domestic, or travel by veterans living close to VA facilities versus veterans who are residing too far from veterans' facilities, actually residing too far.
I'm not aware of any legislative history along those lines mm-hmm. that would address those issues. So to address, I see my time is expired. If I could,
you can have a concluding thought.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You can make a concluding thought.
Okay, I just want to address briefly the specific general point. As to the specific versus the general, our view is not just that the 1724 is more specific because it deals with territory, while 1725 and 1728 deal with the type of care. Our argument is that 1724 contains both the rule and the exceptions to that rule related to extraterritorial application of or extraterritorial provision of care, furnishing of care. So from our perspective, 1724 is more specific in that it is a comprehensive, self-contained accounting for the rules in this subject. And as compared to that self-contained set of rules and exceptions, 1725 and 1728 are more general. And so, of course, those statutes were enacted later in time.
Okay.
So if the court has no other
thank you, Mr. Carr.
Questions, ask the court from the Veterans Court. Yeah. Thank you.
Mr. Saunders, you've got a couple minutes.
Thank you.
Is there any indication in the legislative history of the emergency care provisions that they were designed to enable veterans to travel and receive emergency treatment?
The legislative history doesn't speak to that level of detail. I mean, I think the best indication of Congress's intent is the language Congress used in the statute, and that is it was concerned about whether a VA facility or other federal facility was reasonably available. Could a prudent person sort of make it to that facility, or is this a sufficiently threatening emergency that you can't make it there? And that is generalized logic. That applies to whether it's your residence, that applies to whether you're traveling domestically, that applies to whether you're traveling abroad. And so what we have here on the general versus specific point is we have an old statute that is about all forms of medical services, all forms of hospital care, all forms of domiciliary care, not being furnished overseas. And then Congress comes back later and thinks very specifically about the issue of emergency treatment, this small subset, and thinks very specifically about reimbursement, which, again, to even have a conflict would be the subset of furnishing, and thinks very specifically about where it wants this provided vis-a-vis the facilities. So even if there is a conflict on the statute, the specific provision here is 1725 and 1728. I'd also submit we haven't talked about the veterans canon here, but I think that
since you have very little time, so at least since 1973, there has been this prohibition and an emergency treatment provision. That's well, 50 years. What do we know about VA practice in all that time?
Well, here's the key thing. In 1973 and 1999, the statutes about emergency treatment said may. So the VA had a long period of time. It wasn't under those mandates. It had discretion. In 2008...
So, during those periods, it was not, in fact, paying for services like the services here.
I couldn't tell from looking into that. I couldn't tell what the practice was in this period.
In 2008, it turned
2008 out. Flips the May to Shell. That is where the conflict comes here. In the legislative history in 2008 that's congratulating Congress on being the sort of most pro-veteran Congress they've had, and that's what sort of turns it over and creates this conflict here. While we're talking about legislative history,
so 1724, of course, your interpretation would not be veteran-friendly because the veteran living abroad who had a service-connected disability would not be able to get reimbursement.
Well, but if the VA has to do more to accommodate that veteran, in other words, be more involved.
You're not answering my question. Your construction of 1724 is less veteran-friendly because it would mean that the VA, for someone with a service-connected disability, couldn't reimburse the veteran for care received abroad.
That would be correct. Now, the VA could then change its behavior and be more involved up front. I also would say on this reimbursement point, Judge Legge, I just want to turn back to the 1988 legislative history, House Conference Report 100-578, pages 77 through 78, are talking about the House bill is relating to contract hospital and outpatient treatment or care. And in describing the conference agreement, it's all about furnished care, furnished care, furnished care. It's using the term furnish. Earlier in the report, it talks about to furnish appropriate care, to furnish contract outpatient care, or to arrange for the veteran to receive the nearest care at the nearest VA facility. But I take the point, if you disagree with me on furnish in the abstract, then I think this is a general specific case. And there, you can apply the pro-veteran canon in thinking about which is the more specific provision. And you're not doing anything to 1724. You're leaving it in place. It's just a classic situation where Congress spread out over two different periods of time has created two provisions that are in conflict, and you're giving effect to the later in time, more specific provision that speaks to emergency treatment. And that would be the pro-veteran result here.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Saunders. Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted. That concludes our session for this afternoon.